Hello and welcome to a truly special episode of the Offside Musings podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe, and on behalf of my co-host Emeka Onyeagwa, it's my delight to welcome you. I said that today's show is special, and it is, because we have the first guest in our occasional series focusing on civil liberties in Nigeria. And our guest is Wumi Ashubiaro Dada. And I'm going to give a quick summation of the bio of this truly distinguished guest. So Wumi Ashubiaro Dada is a human rights lawyer with decades of experience working on issues related to social inequality, gender-based violence, women's political participation, and legislative advocacy. She received a Bachelor of Laws degree from Lagos State University, Nigeria, in 1999, and was called to the Nigerian Bar in 2000, having completed her law school in the country. In 2004, Wumi completed a Master of Law degree with specialization in human rights and democratization from the University of Pretoria in South Africa. She currently teaches international criminal law at the University of Toronto, where she's also a PhD candidate at the Center for Criminology and Sociolegal Studies. Her dissertation focuses on gendered early warning and peace-building practices within the ongoing conflicts in Nigeria. Wumi has worked in law and public policy for the past 21 years, where she has designed and managed projects on women and legal reform for non-governmental organizations, government agencies, international development agencies, and occasionally consults for them. She has contributed to novel research such as the Gender in Nigeria Report and led national surveys. Her work experience spans advocacy, research, trainings, project design, implementation, and evaluation. She's a foremost feminist in Nigeria and makes significant personal and technical contributions to the women's movement in Nigeria through her work and activism. She sits on the board of Baobab for Women Human Rights, Gatefield, Abode Community Center in Canada, and the Center for Redefining Alternative Civic Engagement for Africa, while currently working as a project/technical advisor on an early warning project with CLEEN Foundation and on improving electoral integrity project and with WRAPA. So it goes on and on. This is a truly distinguished scholar, activist, feminist. And it's our delight, Wumi, to welcome you to the Offside Musings podcast. Again, as I said, we're doing an occasional series on civil liberties, and you are our very, very first guest, and we're so delighted to have you.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to be here and to talk about, you know, talking about Nigeria is something that never ends, especially for activists. Yes. And so having the opportunity to sit down and muse about Nigeria with you, especially, I consider it a honor, you know, and I really look forward to the conversation. I believe that it will be a pleasurable one with you and Emeka today.
Thanks. Yes, absolutely. So let me start. I'm really, really, really excited about this conversation. Just last night, I was telling a friend, a couple of friends who are colleagues of mine of today's episode. Okay. And so I said that my podcast, that my co-host and I would be interviewing you. And so the question came up, what does it mean to be a feminist? And what does it mean specifically to be a feminist in the context of Nigeria? How would you? That was a question I was asked last night. But how would you? I sort of gave, an answer that I wasn't quite sure whether I rose to the occasion, but I'd like to hear
You
from you. What does it mean for you to be a feminist?
know, that's quite an interesting conversation. And I say interesting because until Chimamanda's very short, writing on We Should All Be Feminists, it seemed like being a feminist in Nigeria was a toga that people did not want to be seen associated with, except for people like me and few other sisters who do not care whose ox are gored. But recently, I would say being a feminist in Nigeria can actually be seen over time as changing. So in the times of our foremothers, people like Olufunmilayo Ransom Kuti, which would be the name that you often would hear, but in truth, people like my grandmother or people like my mother were also feminist. And you would see that being feminist in Nigeria has changed over time. So during their time, women who spoke out against injustices, especially, and it doesn't matter whether it's injustice against a woman or injustice against the community as a whole, was regarded as feminist, but not given the label feminist, but would be regarded as, activists or people fighting for the rights of others. And then we came to a time where democracy started to get a foothold in the country, and you would find people like, say, Abiola Akiode Afolabi, for instance, or Saudatu Madi, that you would categorize within the civil society space. People who set up NGOs like Joy Ezilo, late Obi Okwor, the current Obi Ezekwesili, are regarded as feminists. But more as feminists that were part of the movement for democracy in Nigeria. And usually when there is a movement for a cause like democracy, issues of women's rights is not frontal. And so these women were regarded as activists as well. So, coming from my grandmother to people I would call senior sisters in the movement, and to people like me. And I would say that, my generation is a time where we started really interrogating the word feminism and really interrogating it as a label that we either want to acquire and be known for, or a label that just defines what we're doing. And not really a label that we want to take on until this moment, where we now have younger Nigerians that now want the name feminist. Feminism, especially like on Twitter, the Nigerian Twitter, has now taken on this new framing, especially since ENSAS, where the feminist co led the coordination. Actually, they didn't lead the protest, but the coordination that went into ensuring that the protest was sustained, led to a situation where people started saying, "Oh yeah, I'm a feminist because I can protest." To now we now have being feminists in Nigeria, and now is about taking on the toga, wearing the label proudly, to the extent that people now see feminism as a feminist is an independent, strong, probably even unmarried. Some of the negative connotations, probably unmarried, but really successful, articulate, woman. That is what some people see as being feminist in Nigeria now. So I would say that it's not a one straight answer to explaining what it means to be feminist in Nigeria, but I can say that for me, being feminist in Nigeria means that I'm able to speak to women's rights, make the demands, also bear the label. I wear my label proudly. I introduce myself as a feminist, full stop. No ifs, no buts. I am a feminist, full stop. Even if that means that there's some doors that that are shut against me. And I'll tell you a quick story today. So,
Please.
because of the nature of work that I've done, especially in civil society, I have moved from being a program officer in an NGO to being considered to be what you call a funder. I worked with DFID, and so I was in charge of providing funds to organizations or coalitions that are working on gender equality in Nigeria. So at a point, we were advocating for the passage of the Gender and Equal Opportunities Bill in Nigeria. And there were two coalitions that were working on that, LACVAL and the National Coalition on Affirmative Action. And there were sisters that I truly deeply respect that are doing phenomenal work. Sisters like Saudat Umadi, like Mero Mandara of formerly of Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and Bisi Fayemi. And that is an interesting feminist in Nigeria, because one would consider someone who is within the corridors of power as not being a feminist. But Bisi Fayemi has been a foremost feminist, and she's still a feminist in Nigeria. So the story goes that I am the one, in the sense that you call me a funder, right? I was providing funds for the activities for the passage of this law. And we were to have a meeting with the Sultan of Sokoto, some other Islamic religious leaders, and some Christian leaders, because the two opposition to the bill were on the issue of abortion. Actually, it was called abortion, but it was about women's right to bodily autonomy. And so there were religious oppositions to the bill, and there were also other oppositions to the provision on inheritance, because women under Sharia law can inherit in three ways, but women that are not under Sharia law or that are in the South cannot inherit. And so we had some tensions in there. The story is that I dressed up to go for this meeting that I was supposedly funding. So, you know how meetings go. You're the funder, you're meant to even give an important goodwill speech at this meeting. And I got to the meeting, and two sisters called me aside and said, "Oh, Wumi, you need to go home to change." And I said, "Why?" Said, "Well,
So,
you need
question,
to."
this is the meeting with the Sultan of Sokoto.
With the Sultan of Sokoto,
Yes.
I was asked to go change my clothes because I wore an English dress with like a jacket on it, but it wasn't that I looked, even in the Nigerian context, indecent at all, but that a meeting like that ought to have the women in there dressed in Ankara or abaya, because any other reflection of Western ideas would turn the meeting into a conversation of the Gender and Equal Opportunities Bill, that even the word gender is a Western incursion into our culture. And that is part of what being feminist in Nigeria is, that we actually even make compromises sometimes just to get a foot into the door. And of course, I refused because I wasn't going to change. Like, I don't even live close to the venue, but I felt like my choice, was being critiqued, especially by sisters that I considered to be feminists. And so, for me, I had some problems with that. It was after I had a conversation with him to say, what you did, I found it really, tantamount. It's like against the whole feminist principles of a woman's choice to what she wears, or even our bodily integrity and autonomy. And the conversation ensued about, it's not that my chest was opened or my dress was short, but about a Western outlook to what I was putting on. And as somebody who would climb the podium and talk about how I'm supporting, how the project I'm working on is supporting the bill, I would look like the complete definition of Western incursion. And so that's why I was asked to go to where Ankara and tie up my head, you know, and look Nigerian or look African, and so that the debate would not turn to that, you know. And so that's part of being feminist in Nigeria. And I can assure you that from the conversations that I read online, or conversations that younger feminists actually engage in online, a younger feminist would never understand that point of view of trying to change your outlook so that you don't look Western, you know. Would a younger feminist would probably say, you know what, no, I'm going to be there, I'm going to speak, and I don't care whose ox is gold. I mean, eventually we didn't get the bill. We still don't have the bill. And I laughed at sisters and said, you know what? You still look Nigerian. We didn't give you the bill. So I'm really not sure. You know, so
this is a
to conclude that it speaks to the very systemic and deep barriers that feminists have to engage with or try to cross over in Nigeria. And that is what being feminist in Nigeria means, that you constantly have these barriers, you know, that you have to, sometimes you make compromises, sometimes you damn all consequences. And like we did March last year, when we occupied the National Assembly, you know, when the five gender bills were thrown out. That is part of being feminist in Nigeria.
So it's the anecdote that you told of this presentation before a very highly revered traditional Islamic ruler in Nigeria, to sort of make a case in favor of the gender and equality opportunities bill, which ultimately did not pass. So as you described all of that, I was struck by a fairly frequent, I would say, animus that some people have against the word feminist or feminism. So, and I think that part of it is from this received Western idea that feminists in the West, a wing of them at any rate, will seem to be simply antagonistic to men. That, you know, so there are feminists who are perhaps on an extreme fringe in the West, whose whole idea is we don't need men in our lives, period, right? And so that kind of misrepresentation then comes into Nigeria, where when you say you're a feminist, people say, "Eh, so you don't like man, you know, you hate men, you hate families, you hate children, and so on and so forth," without the understanding that feminism is not incompatible. That in a sense, as you stated earlier, that it's simply a search for equality, you know, of within society. So can you speak to this great misrepresentation of feminism from this received notion that it is the importation of a Western idea to hate men, period?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I started about giving this, should I call it trajectory, or, you know, this categorizations of how we've moved from how my grandmother did feminism, you know, that was what I was also trying to explain, that by the time the word feminism became popularly known, the knowledge of it was what we heard was being done outside of Africa, outside of African shores, which was considered to be anti-African, or, you know, opposite our cultural values or our cultural beliefs, which really were just not being truthful. Because, for instance, I'll give another example of issues of LGBTQ. It is seen as synonymous to feminism. Sexual orientation is seen as synonymous to feminism. And so as feminists, we are, should I say, accused of bringing into Nigeria or into the fore, or even demanding for the protection of the rights of people with a different sexual orientation. And Nigerians like to see people with a different sexual orientation as different and of a Western background, which is not true, because when you consider words like lakiriboto in Yoruba, which lakiriboto is the word that is used for individuals that have a different physical outlook and sexual orientation to the one that is commonly known. And this is a deep and ancient word. It shows that clearly we have had people with different sexual orientation amongst us for long. But if now feminists are taking on the demands for equality or for recognition or for plainly just human rights, the value for the life of these people as part of the demands that we're making, because we recognize that harm to one is harm to all. You know, we're accused of that, and it forms part of the negativity that surrounds the use of the word feminism. You know, and when people sometimes also hear feminists and they consider their backgrounds and they find that this articulate, you know, fierce woman, and in any case, you know, a woman is not considered, is not expected to be fierce. A woman is not expected to be vocal. You know, once you're fierce and you're vocal, you're called Margaret Thatcher. These are some of the labels that women actually acquire within the Nigerian context. Oh, she's behaving like a man. So once you step out of the normative definition of what a woman is, you're actually, right now in Nigeria, that's what is happening. You're actually considered a feminist. Once you step out of how a woman is meant to behave or speak, or the demands that she's meant to make, even in terms of women's personal lives, a woman who offers to pay for a date, a woman who you know, likes sex in a certain way, is called a feminist. Because we're now considered to be the opposite of what a woman should be. And so these negative connotations, which really it's about how the society is opening up to now see what Nigerians consider as anomalies, to now see how much of it we have in the society. That is why people consider it as Western. It's not Western. There's nothing Western about how, I mean, yes, we cannot run away from globalization and its impact, and how, you know, when you talk about music, when you talk about fashion as well, we're influenced by whatever is coming from other countries. We're not insulated as Nigerians, and it is this that of course drives the argument that feminism is Western. By the time we came to the word, people failed to see the actions of someone like my mother, who would stand in the middle of her street and say that every child in this area, so you know, the word area is more commonly used in Southwest, every child in this area has to go to school. She stands on the street to demand to say, I saw your family wearing an Ankara, you know, for Ashoebi. And so you cannot tell me that you do not have money to send this child to school. That is, she's demanding for equal education access for this child. That is part of what feminism is. But she wouldn't be called a feminist. Why? Because she's seen as someone who has a husband, who has children, who is considered homely. Even if she's not the one doing the cooking in the home, but she's considered homely, they don't consider her as a feminist. They consider her as an activist. So it's these the way that we understand what is happening or what has happened outside the country to mean feminism, to say that what we have in Nigeria is not feminism, that is what makes them see feminism as a bad label, as a negative label. And even women as well will tell you, oh, sorry, I'm not a feminist, but I would demand for women's rights. And I'm thinking, okay, you may not want the label, but you're doing the work of feminist.
Yes.
But I'm happy that right now we now have younger Nigerians who I would say, I told someone recently, I said, younger Nigerians have seen that our foremothers and our mothers and people like us, try to be political and try to be politically correct by not taking on the label, by making compromises, but it has not got us the results that we want to see. Right now in Nigeria, most of the unbanked are women. Right now in Nigeria, the number of girls that are out of school is more than the number of boys that are out of school. Right now in Nigeria, the health system is failing women more because when it comes to biology, the body of the woman goes through more stress, whether it is through childbirth or even, the monthly flow that women has. So the health system is failing women more. So when you talk about all the indices, we have not really gained so we've not gained as much as we would want to gain, yet we've been making compromises. And so younger ones are saying, I don't care. I'm not going to make a compromise. I'm not going to be a dutiful, female just to get things that we are in any case not getting. And that's why I'm happy that people are taking on the label right now of saying they're feminist. And I'm more glad that these are younger females that are not even in the NGO sector. They're not in the CSO sector that would say, oh, human rights education gave us this awareness. They come to this awareness by seeing the inadequacies and the negativity in the society to say, look, I will demand for my rights as a feminist.
So you have and I'm gonna let you my co-host Emeka come in after this one. So you have sort of laid out some of the many ways in which women fare significantly worse in Nigeria. So talking about the unbanked, the unschooled, and those who are poorly served by the healthcare system. You've also talked about that injustice to one is an injustice to all, which is something that makes eminent sense, right? And I think that part of the argument that Chimamanda Adichie, the great novelist, makes is ultimately in saying that we should all be feminists, is to underscore the ways in which the rights of women, when they are properly recognized and respected, actually would lead on the whole to a healthier society. Because these women, after all, are
Absolutely.
sisters, they are our girlfriends, our wives, our mothers, grandmothers, and so on. So,
Yeah,
because I think
absolutely.
that at the granular level,
It's
yes,
just to
so
say
that at the granular
the
level, if you say to somebody, do you want your mother, your sister, your girlfriend, your wife, your whatever, a
you know
woman
why
that you know,
I'm
would you
butting
want
in?
that woman? Yes,
You know why I'm butting in on
please.
that? That sometimes even that argument actually still puts us within the sphere where it's like, let's do this for the women. No, actually, it makes more economic sense that you cannot
Sense.
have, we're half the sky. Women are half the sky. So when you actually put in place a level playing field, the economy feels better and life is better because the burden on every individual is reduced. So don't even consider us as, I always say, don't even consider me as your daughter or as your sister or as your mother. Consider me as a resource. So economically, it just makes more economic, smarter economic sense to ensure that the rights of women are equally protected. Apologies
Yes.
for butting in.
Yes. No. This is actually it's a very important intervention. So I appreciate it. So let me sort of ask again, Emeka. I know that I said that I was going to pause, but let me, if you permit me, let me ask one more question before I do that. So you have put quite a lot of issues on the table here. If you were asked what the most pressing issues are for women in Nigeria today, which issues would you isolate as the most important and pressing for women in our country?
Wow, that's it's a big ask. It's like a blank check.
I'm sorry.
that I have to fill.
Well,
Oftentimes,
luckily, I know that you have engagements today, so that you're not going to go to town and spend hours answering that.
I think some foundational things is what I would be asking for here. The first, which I know is the most difficult because it takes a generation to crystallize and formulate. And so it would take another generation or probably two generations to actually unravel and unbind, which is social norms. If the way that women are treated in Nigeria today is actually driven by the social norms in the country, it is the beliefs that we have about who a woman is and what a woman should be, and the limits of what a woman is, that is what drives issues of gender-based violence. That is what drives access to social services. That is what drives whether people can vote for a woman to become a governor. That is what drives, accessibility of women into power and whether women are able to engage in even other sectors like aviation, like engineering, and within the private sector. And these social norms is so important because one of the norms is that women are good financial experts. They keep money well, they don't spend money anyhow. They manage things very well. And that's why you see that women are progressing within private sector. And when it comes to positions in any constituency, whether it is a cooperative or a political party or something, positions of treasurer, have you noticed? Positions of treasurer, financial secretary, it's like, oh yes, let's have a woman there because we're sure that she can keep our money. Have you noticed how for years now we've had a female in the position of Ministry of Finance? It's like, oh, the women keep good records. So, and that's why social norms is really for me one huge thing that if we could change our mindsets, if we could change beliefs, if we could change some of the even religious underpinnings of our beliefs, that things would actually change for women in Nigeria. That's on the one hand. And I know that sometimes with social norms, you can even transverse into issues of the legal framework because a legal framework like the Constitution, having a provision that a woman, a female Nigerian, cannot pass on citizenship to her foreign husband is social norms. It what drives or what drove the articulation of that provision in the Constitution is social norms. That a woman is to be owned and she's not to own another. And that's why the constitutional provision would say a woman should not cannot vest citizenship on her foreign husband. Meanwhile, a man, of course, can a male Nigerian can vest citizenship on his foreign wife. The same constitution, and I'm talking about legal frameworks that also that need to change. The same constitution actually considers every female that is married to be an adult. That is a provision that people say today supports child marriage in Nigeria, because it's expected that it is only adults that can go into this legal relationship of marriage. And so once, and when you say that a female that is married is vested with adulthood, then it means that you're saying a child can get married and then, you know, ascend to become an adult based on that legal contract called marriage. So there are issues to do with our legal frameworks. There are some laws in Nigeria that ought to be scrapped, which some states still have. The criminal code and the penal code, particularly like the penal code, there are provisions within that that still support it's the correction of a wife by a husband, you know, or if a husband beats his wife, it's considered misdemeanor if she does not spend up to 40 days in the hospital. So we do have that. And I think that we need newer legal frameworks, because some things cannot be actualized in Nigeria except it's put in the law. Issues of proportional representation or even representation of women, affirmative action for women, I think it needs to be legislated upon, because before they would say, oh, women are not contesting for positions. Now women are aspiring, they're contesting for positions, but they're not getting, sometimes they don't get the ticket of the party, sometimes they don't get voted in. But I believe that if we legislate on this, it would start to change. You know, sometimes you use a law to change a belief because it triggers change. For instance, the seat belt is one example of how the law actually changed people's behavior and beliefs. So those two key things, not to drag on too much, because I know that if we change the social norms, it would impact health, it would impact education, it would impact issues of gender-based violence, it would impact political participation, it would impact the economy as well. You know, it would impact the financial situation of women in Nigeria. It would impact even the fact that now women bear the face of poverty in Nigeria. Social norms and legal frameworks are two critical things. And maybe because I'm a lawyer, I would, of course, often defer to legal frameworks. I think those are two critical things that would like to put on the table. Or I would like to put on the table. Last one is as it has to do with security. For every Nigerian right now, the security of lives and property is a huge demand that we are all making. And that impacts women much more, you know, because sometimes it's better if you're even killed than to be left to bear the brunt of, you know, having to be the only one sustaining the family, or you're dealing with the aftermath of having been raped in conflict, or the aftermath of living in a refugee situation.
Thank you. Emeka, do you want to jump in, please?
You've said a lot today, so it's you've covered quite a bit, so I don't even know where to start from, but I guess for me, there's obviously going to be a big disconnect in terms of what feminist ideals in Nigeria might be, how much they are just an offshoot of what the feminist ideals in the West are. So I think a fantastic book has been for me, The Invention of Woman, Ibirunke Oyewumi. It's a phenomenal book where she talks about a whole bunch of things, tackles in terms of even the realities of certain gender norms that people make assumptions of, say like cooking, for instance, in Nigeria, where people assume that the gender norm prior to the coming of the British was that women were the ones that did the cooking, where that wasn't the case. And again, in my own particular situation is like my grandmother, who is not with us anymore, owned their own home in our father's house and all that. My mom as well, my mom just turned 70, owned her own home. So when I hear this thing, I'm like, okay, how do you, because essentially in the West, it's a whole different thing. Feminism is a whole different thing in the West than what you would have in what you might be talking about. Some a good piece I remember you saying right now is about it's considered a misdemeanor if you beat your wife and she doesn't spend 40 days in the hospital. So that's an issue of violence generally, but more so, I don't subscribe to what happens in the West personally. I might understand the situation of structure. Some structures need to adapt to modernity. But for me, I would look more to how does this strengthen, how does feminism in your ideals, how is it going to strengthen the family? Because to me, family structure and the family unit is the key to growth, good norms, better human beings as a whole. So how does it strengthen the family unit? Because if you've read, I don't know if you've had, but she puts it very well in terms of that. I think it's a phenomenal book. She puts it very well in terms of that, the strengthening of...
Which book is this?
That's Oyeronke Oyewumi. That's The Ambition of Woman.
Okay.
So she puts it very well, very phenomenally in terms of how the family structure was changed with the coming of this. Now, like my grandmother, if she was alive, she'd be... Because my mom is 70. My mom was the fifth of six children. My mom is rather the fifth of six children. My grandmother was probably be close to 100. So a lot of the things she did in terms of owning properties happened prior to the coming of the British, for instance. The coming of the British abolished property ownership for women. Like in Igbo land, for instance, there's always a famous case that people like to cite. But there's a distinction in that case in terms of ancestral land and land outside the house, which is a massive distinction. So in my grandmother's case, she owned her land before the British even came. It'll have been a lot more complex for that. So again, it's like, how does it strengthen the family? And in terms of structures, is also taking a look at how much do you ascribe to the pre-British, the modern, this thing. Yes, there are certain norms. I don't know people who generally go about beating up their wives in Nigeria anyway. So I would put that as I grew up in a healthy environment. I grew up in a and I don't even think I'm perfect either way, but because I got my own personal family issues, but I grew up overall in a very healthy environment. I didn't know anybody that got beat up in my environment. You know, if for anything, actually, funny enough, it's the other way around. I actually know quite a few guys that got beat up. Again, my mom is and that's the point that you are getting to that. So it's more about power that you are not going to beat up Babangida's daughter. I don't think you're going to try. You're not going to beat up Obasanjo's daughter. You're not going to beat up somebody that is more powerful than you. There's no way you are going to survive. You probably will not live. I have witnessed certain things that have happened. So when people talk about it in terms of changing the dice, it's my thing is it changing it to make family structures better? Because I don't subscribe to the Western ideals of for most things right now in terms of family structures. There are parts of the Western ideals that they still fight for it, but overall I don't subscribe to the modern day version of the Western ideals. I do admit there are problems, but my whole thing is, does your movement take that into consideration? Is that part of it, or is it just a question of it? There's women, there's feminism, there's also gender, which the conversation since the eras of the 50s and 60s has been to convince everybody that gender is a social construct, not a biological construct. So I know it's a lot to take in, but in terms of that, I am all for stronger families, giving people opportunities to be able to make better human beings so we leave the world better than we met it when it's our time to go. And I don't feel some of those ideals generally tend to that. So I don't know if yours do. So if they do, it would be a very interesting thing to hear about. Yeah,
I think
I want to hear thoughts. Those are my thoughts.
It's really interesting that, you know, often it's about how do we build stronger families? And really, that's what women, especially when you see women activists and all, and look at pull together, pull apart, or put in different boxes the different demands that are being made. These demands would strengthen families because remember when I said earlier about being half the sky? So we have a situation right now where we have families where the burden actually weighs heavily on one party. A family, let's take the heterosexual family, right? A family is, even in any kind of setting, a family is often considered as two people coming together to have offsprings, whether adopted or given to biologically, to, and that is a family unit. And I would say that if we continue the way that we are going in Nigeria, that some families are going in Nigeria, and you will see that we're having a lot more divorce rates now. Why? Because the burden is getting to women. Because not only, before there were shared, there would be shared responsibilities, people would keep managing and all that. But right now, women are saying, I can't keep on managing. I hear stories about, before it would be that rent is paid only by the man, school fees is paid only by the man, and maybe for some families, maybe the woman takes care of the day-to-day food, which also adds up, right? But it's considered as it's not huge because it's not a one-time payment or a one-time spending of a huge amount of money like the rent and the school fees. But now we have seen families change totally. And I know of at least people that are my age mates or older that now have families set up in a way that it's about who has the most to take on this particular project, whether it's school fees or rent or feeding. Families are now being structured differently, but we still have some particular structures in the society, or maybe even what you would call policy or legal frameworks, that is not allowing these formation to become what is most predominant in the society. So what do I mean by that? Because that maybe sounds a bit theoretical. Where you have a society where the norm is that it's a man that does all the payment. And I would actually invite you to look for one research we worked on. It's called Being a Man in Nigeria. I'll send you the link.
Oh, it's
Yeah,
always been.
it's and we did that research to show the burden that men bear and how that burden, of course, impacts then on women and on how the society is structured. Where a society expects that a woman or a man should make most of the payments, or maybe you go out on a date, it's a man that should pay. A woman that steps out of that is actually considered in a negative light, and that's what I mean by there's some structures that is not allowing these natural formations where people are now renegotiating their relationships. There are structures that is not allowing that to become more predominant. A man that is seen backing his child is considered as a weakling, is considered as a woman wrapper. Meanwhile, he's doing his responsibility as a father. He's not even helping his wife, because a lot of people say, oh, a woman that is washing plates is helping his wife. A woman
A
that is
man,
washing
you mean a
plates,
man,
sorry, a man
not
that is
that a
washing,
man.
a man, thank you. Yeah, a man that is washing plate is not helping his wife. A man that is washing plate is helping his family. It's about a joint responsibility. So coming back to your question, Emeka, about do my feminist ideals or the women's movement in Nigeria, as it were now, do the feminist ideals help families to become stronger? Yes, it does. Because a feminist ideal that is saying, let's pause, let's look at the burden that women are bearing. We all know about unpaid care work. A family member is ill, it's the woman that has to take care of that family member. A feminist ideal that clamors for changes in the way that families are structured, such that one partner in that family does not bear all the burden, is a family, is a feminist ideal that is about family growth.
I heard one thing you said, sorry to that part of it, it struck me. Oh, apologies. What you said, if somebody's ill and the woman has to. I'm like, not in my experience.
Not in my experience.
I took care of my father when he was ill. Helped take care of my grandmother. Sure. Oh, yes. I was his primary caregiver.
And by the way, Emeka and I happen to be great cooks in our family. In fact, I'm the primary cook for my family. Yes.
Yeah, so because my father,
I know that Emeka cooks a lot, but
what's most common? What is most common?
Oh yeah, clearly. In fact, some of my friends are scandalized when I tell them that I cook, right? And I say to them, I didn't know how to cook in Nigeria at all. I came to America and I started eating Oyibo food. I didn't like it, and I had to learn to cook. And once I learned, I became so good at it that I've cooked on several continents. I've cooked in numerous countries, in different places in this country. But a lot of my friends are bemused by it, you know. So when I arrive at their homes and I say, okay, you and I are going to cook, let your wife rest. They say, oh, no, you know. But I say, And some of my friends have scolded me. They say, you know, my wife will not let me into the kitchen. I said, nobody can drive me from the kitchen, because to know how to cook is a very important skill to have. I mean, my wife tries as a cook, but when my kids were young, if they were asked who should make your meals, they always chose their daddy making their meals because they felt I was a better cook.
But for me though, I wouldn't even cook. I've always cooked. My mother, when she came into Lagos in 71, first thing she did was do what you might call an equivalent of an associate's in catering management. Then she went to University of Lagos to study nursing. That was just to say that she was a professional, this thing. Mm-hmm. But my father could make a lot of food better than her. And the one thing my father was retired as an assistant controller general of customs. So he had, towards the end of his tenure, he had at least four rotating cooks. We had four rotating cooks in the house, but he would still cook. And it goes back to that book I was talking about. You go back to it, the ideology that it's always the woman, always, keyword is always, it's actually a mid concept brought about by the British distant. Because when you look at it, when you think of it, and when you understand it, like it's like most times, most men and a lot of women would spend days on the farm. Nobody's cooking for you on the farm, man. There's nobody cooking for you on the farm. You are cooking for yourself, which is the genesis of a lot of foods that people still eat. Swallow, the genesis of swallow, igbolo, something like igbolo. I don't know what the term is in Yoruba again, but igbolo, like asara, all these tomato based Yoruba dishes like asaro, pepper yam, pepper meat, asusun. These are things that have a. I don't know if OK's laptop went out, but these are things that have. Okay, it's back on. These are things that have a long lasting. They last long, but you could take them to the farm. Yes, but you get to the farm. It doesn't matter if sometimes the men would be at the farm and all that. It's the man that ends up cooking. And the major, like in Igbo land, the major crop used to be the major crop that the men would do typically would be yam. You have some women do yam, but typically it'd be yam. But the women control, like you said yourself, the women control a large part of the finances. In fact, the financial power of the home was the woman. It was always the woman. And if you control the finances in the house.
Can I ask a quick question of both of you, because I really love the fact that just a quick question. So when you think about it, the way that your home is structured right now, your individual homes, who is the one with the responsibility to think of food, cook, like when you consider the percentage of who thinks of, oh, grocery, we need to do grocery shopping, you know, thinks of it. It may be that the person is not the one that does the grocery shopping, but the person who you know it's not written, but it falls on them to think through food. In the home. Who is it?
Yes. Well, in my case, I'm the one. Because I do most of the cooking. Past year I've been teaching in a university outside of my home. So I'll go home every other weekend or something, roughly, unless I'm traveling out of the country.
Yeah.
So I'll look around and see what needs to be done, and I'll make egusi soup for my family. You know, my children and my wife love my egusi soup, my okra soup, and I'll make it enough and freeze for them, and then come back to where I'm teaching and make my own, right? And so I'll be the one knowing that, okay, we're low on fish, we're low on onions, and so on and so forth, and just, you know, buying things. So I end up my wife, of course, accompanies me. We're very, very close, and my parents were extremely, extremely close. And so I think that in a lot of ways, Emeka and I were fortunate to have parents, mother and father. My parents modeled for us what it means to work together, husband and wife, right? My father never made a decision without my mother. In any case, they both held one account. You know, my parents had the same account. And one of the things that moved me, which I hated my father when he did this years ago, was I heard a man tell my father, you know, there's something I want to tell you, but you're not to tell anybody, not even your wife, because this man knew that my parents were very, very close. And my father said to this man, I don't keep any secrets from my wife. So if I can't tell my wife, do not tell me. And in those days, I was a young man, and I felt my father is such a loser. Why would he be so close to his wife that he tells his wife everything? But that's the situation I find myself in now. So since my father's death, I've become more like him. So my wife and I have a notoriously close relationship. And so I take a joy, you know, in doing the things that my children love, you know, which is cooking for them, cooking for my wife. And she, you know, so my family loves my cooking. Emeka, I know
it's been all over the place. So I served in the U.S. military. Sometimes I haven't been around, so that's the part of having this thing. My wife has done a lot of that work, but right now I'm home doing graduate studies at Fordham and Columbia. So the primary person in the house that does primary shopping is right here. It's me that does it. Maybe right now I have a lot of papers to go through and stuff. I haven't cooked in like 2-3 weeks, I think 2-3 weeks. But I'm making this thing of fada rice on Sunday. Oh, so I'm back on Sunday.
I'm coming.
I make, in fact, my wife doesn't like eating anybody's rice but my own now. So I make the rice. I sit down. So it's again, and it was the same way. My mom started by studying nursing and had a master's degree in nursing and became a lawyer. And my mom is a hot-tempered person. So some days she would just be like, she's not cooking. My father would just come home, take off his uniform, give to his orderly, and start pounding him. Literally start pounding him. And the most painful part, but it wasn't painful, the most distinct part for her is that when he finishes, he'll start licking the plates. And then we two start licking the plates. And then she's like, man, I missed out, man.
Damn. Oh my goodness.
I'm like, yo, Dad, can you cook for us tomorrow?
Emeka, actually, the question that I have from all of this conversation, you know, this really interesting detour, right, is it possible to call a man a feminist?
Oh yeah.
And under what conditions?
The question is what are the feminist ideals? I have this argument with my wife. My wife would tell me, yeah, I'm a feminist. I'm like, look, man. Look,
He's saying, look, man. He's saying, look, woman.
Look, I do my job. I do my duty. I will. I've gone to put my life on the literally going to put my life on the line for country and family. Right. So I do my job. I do my duty.
So you don't I want the best for her. Consider yourself a feminist, Emeka.
I consider myself a fair-minded person. I think if there's something, I think family matters. I think family matters. I grew up in a healthy environment, but we have our issues 100%. But I think family matters. I think having that family structure, it's a lot different from what you have here. And they tell you, these ideals, I have a problem with that. I don't, like, my wife would say, well, if she's up for a promotion, I don't want to give her because she's a woman. I say, okay, so what's the criteria? There's subjectiveness to everything. But what's the criteria? Did you fall out of the criteria completely? Or was it a subjective thing?
Okay.
You know, we have these arguments and it's back and forth. And I tell her, the people I look up to who I've had the pleasure of hanging out with a couple of times, people like Okonjo-Iweala, she's had 4 kids, raised them. It's not like Margaret Thatcher, whose son is busy plotting coups in Guinea-Bissau and doing all this nonsense. You know, you have an Okonjo-Iweala, whose son is busy winning Academy Awards, writing fantastic scripts, and has a daughter that, you know, you have people who, at least from a distance, I'm not close to them like that, from a distance,
but
you've raised productive human beings that continue, and you could be like that, you know, not when you say, hey, you don't, I believe in life. So some people are nihilistic. I'm not nihilistic. I believe, I don't understand everything about life, but I believe life will continue past us. Mm-hmm. And we should leave it. We should try and leave it better than we met it. And part of that is the people we leave behind. Mm-hmm. So
I guess the question is, Emeka, and this is again, a way of asking a question to you, Wumi, is that, in Nigeria, right?
Yeah.
In Nigeria, I think it's fair to say that there is significant inequalities between men and women. I don't know, Emeka, if you disagree on that question.
I mean, to some degree, but let me hear what, to some degree.
I do believe it.
To some degree, I could agree.
Huge
and
significant inequalities in the country, Nigeria. Research, data, statistics shows that women in Nigeria can hardly, not all women in Nigeria can make a choice, even as little as what course to study. And I'm talking of families where people can then afford to go to university. That choice is made for women, while it's not made for the male child. So in every strata, I just use that as an example. In every strata, we all know about politics. Women, how women are cheated out of politics, how they're not considered to be leaders, because some attributes that women supposedly have is not considered as leadership attributes, like being compassionate, like even being able to shed tears is considered that a leader should not be crying, and a woman is considered to be emotional, and so a woman cannot be a leader. You can do all the deductions, you know, to the inequalities that you just see right there on the street. Yaba, did you hear about the protest in Yaba? It was a march protest in Yaba. A woman goes to the market in Yaba, Ojuelegba, and she's pulled. And when she refuses the advance of somebody who just wants to sell jeans to her, she's called an ashewo. She's called a prostitute. A man would not go through that. So even in terms of appearance, I mentioned earlier how a woman who is considered, who is seen as vocal, who is seen as knowing what she wants, is given a negative name. The inequalities is rife. It is only a woman that goes through child marriages. And child marriage is not just a northern problem. You actually find child marriages in Southwest, in Southeast, in South-South, you know? Even where a boy marries early, he's at least about 18, 19 before he's given an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old to marry. And so physically, psychologically, physiologically, look at all the different parameters, indices women are at the receiving end in Nigeria. And so the inequality, the gap is actually really huge. You mentioned something earlier, yes. And I'll end with that on this, about a woman is to be promoted. Is it because she's not a woman? Do you know why some women don't get promoted? Because maybe she missed an opportunity to write an exam or sit for a promotion exam because she was pregnant and she was going through maternity leave. And when it comes, and they use this objective, it will be called objective parameters, right? Did you write the exam? No, she did not. Because, well, she was writing an exam in the labor room. These are objective parameters that are then used against the woman. A woman is married to a man that says, you can't travel for that workshop because you have to be in the, how can I allow you to go to a hotel? We did a meeting where we invited women to come. We would put them in hotels. Some women's husbands said, you can't, I can't, my friends, I can't allow my friends see you walk through the gate of a hotel. Would a man be told that? Those are some of the inequalities that women have to go through, or, you know, the barriers that women have to go through in Nigeria.
I mean, I think it makes sense that there are some, barriers here and there. I'm one of those guys that I disagree that everybody's the same. I disagree whether you take it by. I think you could say is cosmic. Doesn't matter what religion you are, whether you worship Odudua or whether you worship that, men and women need each other, mm-hmm. and perform different roles, and sometimes can, you know, stagger the roles in certain, like in my case, can, or yeah. a lot of cases. But to always be like, okay, it needs to be, it's always going to be the same, is it's never, it's ever, even in a family, you start off all the same, equity. But you, Well, equity or maybe opportunities, but not what of opportunities, but it's never, even with opportunities, I'm sure even in your household, mm-hmm. you are doing better than some of your siblings. Is it, you know, is it because you're a woman, you're doing better?
Poor. So right now, I'm not.
Okay, so Wumi, you just used the word equity, which is at least in the West and in America currently is quite loaded. Because people have talked about equality, equality of access to opportunities and so on, and then equity comes into the conversation, and some people are saying that equity must entail sometimes positive discrimination against people who have had advantages in the past, mm-hmm. in order to give a kind of advantage to those who have been disadvantaged in the past. Yeah. There are all kinds of debates about that, you know. I know that in this country, when you talk about equity and people say, okay, Black people have been historically oppressed.
Yeah.
So you need to give them a head start. Mm-hmm. So some European who just came from Norway yesterday and has had to learn English will say, hey, I wasn't part of the oppression in the past and I didn't have any advantages in America. So I just arrived myself. So I need actually to be given that thing. So is it... And I wanted to ask you a question, for example, when you were talking about the poor representation or the almost total non-representation of women in the political, serious political sphere, as governors, as senators, as presidential candidates and so on. So whether you would support something like setting out a certain percentage of positions for women, it's saying the legislative arm of government, in the executive arm and so on. Is it something that you would support in pursuit of equity?
Yeah,
or absolutely. Would you just want equal opportunity? So
The way that our political machinery is in Nigeria, if you recall, I earlier said some things cannot be achieved without a legal framework backing it. And one of these is affirmative action. Affirmative action is a temporary measure which we have advocated for continuously. There was a time we said, let's have affirmative action for the next four rounds of elections. it won't be there forever. Just like we had the JAMB, what's it called? Federal character. We have federal character is an affirmative action measure, which right now ought to be scrapped because it has done its work and it's now started acting, contrary to why it was set up. So when you put in an
The
affirmative action
intention.
measure, it should be for a period of time, except if the conditions that led to that inequity continues to abate. And some people would make that case for education, especially in the northern part of the country. Anyway, back to the issue of politics. I do believe that certain positions have to be, spaces have to be secured for women. It is only when a woman has been able to occupy a position that people can see that women indeed can lead. I know that there are some outliers. I'm not saying that women are saints. I'm not saying that women also are not corrupt or that women don't cheat, but we've not had enough women occupying the position to be able to switch in the minds of people that women can be governors. I have a lot of stories because I've worked on a lot of projects. We once went to okay, I'll tell you this quick one. Enamufu, College of Education in Enamufu in Enugu State is a college of education that has about 90% female students. Before 2014, not once since the establishment of that school has a female become the student union president. Remember, the school is about over
90.
90%
Wow.
students. Female students were not contesting for SUG president. Even where they contest, they were not being voted in. We went into that school, designed a safe space initiative where we talked about leadership and gender-based violence, and where students got to realize that they had never considered a female SUG president because they saw the position of presidency as something that is masculinized. After the safe space session for about 2 terms, there was an election that was going to take place. There were about 4 contestants. Two of them were women, two were female, two were male. Eventually, two of the males dropped down to support one of the female students. And for the first time in about 30 years or so that the school had been existing, we got the first female SUG president. And since that time, they've been having it. We did the same initiative in at UNN because we did this project in Kano, Enugu, Lagos, and in Kaduna. At
How
UNN,
did it go in Kaduna and Kano? I'll be.
UNN also, just to quickly say that, a female SUG president emerged. But after that, the next president was male. But it was okay, enough. At least it started changing behaviors and thinking. In Kano, they did not have elections at the time that we ran the project. But what we saw was that for the school, but the departmental heads, females started emerging. We promoted a lifestyle brand called Purple because that's how you get young people. And so we promoted that being purple is being cool, and being cool is supporting a woman's leadership, is being a supportive or a caring boyfriend to your girlfriend that does not, you don't beat your girlfriend and all of that. We had a radio drama series, and parents, there was a particular story in Kano. A father called and said he has allowed his daughter to register with civil defense just by hearing the story of the radio drama, because we had different series on the radio drama where this female, went on to join the army, did great works in the society. I'm just saying that when you give the opportunity for visibility, something visual that people can see, they begin to see how it is possible, for a woman to become a leader. And that's why we need affirmative actions. Affirmative action. Political parties can do this. They can have a ballot for the 3 senatorial in each state and say that at least one senatorial district must return a female candidate. Let that female candidate then battle it with other female candidates from other parties for the elections. For the House of Reps, a third of that position, the ticket must be given to women. So there's affirmative action that Kenya and Uganda did where they created special seats for women. Sometimes that works against women, but it could also work to get more women in. We may not want that in Nigeria because we keep shouting about the cost of governance, but at least let us secure this seat, because there are women that are party members that are funding parties in Nigeria, and they deserve those tickets to be able to contest.
The one you said first, I like that, going to schools and saying, look, that 100%, man, you got me there. 100%. Yeah, no bad. You have me on board.
Where did I lose
when you start talking of why you lose me when you start talking of let's have affirmative act? In fact, do you know why there's federal character? You know, federal character comes from the Civil War, and you know the problem with the Civil War, the major problem, which there's always people who always want to have a different opinion of the Civil War, but the major problem with the Civil War, of the reason that the Civil War happens, is people see people dominating certain sectors, especially they see Igbos dominating the federal civil service. So because of that, post-Civil War, what you end up having is that you have, oh, let's create states, let's dilute any Igbo influence, because once you have a larger conglomerate of people, Igbos can distant, and then let's create federal character. So federal character was not necessarily there to unify or it was just there to say, hey, let's have equality of outcome. And that's the problem I have with that. You're saying let's have equality of outcome. And I would say, I get what you're saying. We could promote all these things, saying, hey, this candidate might be better being, even though she's a woman. Oh, this candidate might be better. Let's have a look at these kind of things. But when you say, hey, the system is terrible, let's have further character. Let's spread the terribleness to everybody. Like,
I like that phraseology. Let's spread the terribleness. There's something that for me, I was just learning, right? So in a sense, I'm scandalized, and so I want to come back to it. When you were talking about social norms, you spoke about the idea of correction, and that in some statutes in Nigeria, that a man is deemed to have merely corrected his wife if his beating of the wife leads her to spend about 40 days or less in the hospital. Pray tell me this is no longer a law in any part of Nigeria, please.
It's in the penal code. Let me get you the section.
No bloody way.
I
believe you. I don't have a doubt in that. I think it shouldn't be there.
That sort of thing should be out of the law. There should be no place at all for spousal battery of any sort, even if it is that all you leave is marks of your finger on a spouse's face. Please, could you read it out? Because this is a scandal. And I will challenge any member of the National Assembly who is... So is it federal law?
It's a state law. So that's the thing. So right now...
What state is that?
Oh, for the northern states actually implemented penal code, while the southern states are regulated by the criminal code. So one of the things that we have been able to do as feminists is we've been able to push for the passage of the Violence Against Persons Act. The first time it passed at the FCT, was signed. People thought it was for the whole of Nigeria because Goodluck Jonathan signed it just before he left. But because it regulates a part of the constitution which falls on the concurrent list, it's a matter for the state to deal with. Criminal matters are for the state. So Section 55 says correction of child, pupil, servant, or wife. Nothing is an offense which does not amount to the infliction of grievous hurt upon any person which is done by a parent or guardian for the purpose of correcting his child or ward. I want to actually bring out the full section because this is on equality now. Which is done A, by a parent or guardian for the purpose of correcting his child or ward. B, by a schoolmaster for the purpose of correcting a child. C, by a master for the purpose of correcting a servant or apprentice. Or D, by a husband for the purpose of correcting his wife. Such husband and wife being subject to any native law or custom in which such correction is recognized as lawful. And grievous hurt is then defined at the end, you know how definitions are put at the end of laws as hurt, yes, which can be true. Grievous hurt is any hurt which has an extension of above 40 days or something like that in the hospital. Wow. So that's how it is worded. I think I can paste in the chat
it's for me, it's astonishing that we have such laws. I mean, such things should be immediately expunged from our laws. Immediately. Yeah.
But that harms everybody. If you walk around dehumanizing people around you, it also dehumanizes yourself as well.
I know you've been very, very, you know, we had said we needed an hour from you, so we're approaching an hour and a half. So let's sort of round up, and Emeka, I don't know if you have another question to throw in, but let's round up by, if you will make a summative statement about some of the things that you want to see in the immediate future, in the next, within, we're soon going to inaugurate the next National Assembly, some of the priorities that you would like to have them take up from the perspective of the kind of work that you've done.
A couple of things. There are some laws that we have placed before National Assembly, which we call the five gender bills. Some of these laws, one touches on the issue of amending the Constitution to allow women to be able to pass on citizenship. There's a law on indigenship as well, because women are often cheated out of political appointments or even contesting for positions where they marry outside of their state. This, I'm sure you have examples where women are told, oh, you're only married to our state, you're not from our state. Meanwhile, in her state, she's told that she has gone to marry in another state, and so she's no longer part of their state. So we have a law on indigenship, which is a law that would allow anyone that has stayed in a particular location, location for 5 years and above to be able to contest in that location. We also have one on affirmative action that creates seats, extra seats for women, and another one on affirmative action for women within the political party structures. We do think that a reconsideration of these five gender bills will be a statement to Nigerian women that National Assembly does consider them to be part and parcel of Nigeria. That is on the one hand. Mm-hmm. The second, which I spoke about, which is about social norms, there's some easy ways that we can go about it as individuals in our private spaces, in the corners where we control things. We can begin to actually speak out and speak up against injustices and inequalities within the system, and begin to challenge where we see these injustices. There are issues to do with the private sector that the National Assembly is not paying attention to. There was a time that National Assembly tried to pay attention to that by putting up a bill that prohibited prostitution of women by banks. There are ways that can be done. I think the National Assembly Committee on Banking can do much more in terms of ensuring that women and especially young men in the banking sector, for instance, are protected from sexual harassment by their bosses, and all kinds of harassment that comes up in forms of the targets that they are given to.
All the harassment I've seen in my life have come in Nigeria. All the harassment I've seen, all of A to Z, come to 95%, all of them.
Yeah, and it leads to inequity and power imbalance. That once you're considered as someone who can be violated, you know, and we see this even as you're walking on the street, even if you're a man, someone sees you as someone who can be violated, they will come against you. People who have money in Nigeria want this money to be able to booga and to be able to just harass the next person. You know, these are things that we can start changing as individuals, because it also affects women. It affects men. It affects women. It affects people that are living below the poverty line, or even on the poverty line. Another thing, just hammering on what National Assembly can do, another thing that National Assembly can do is really pay attention to our budgets. Our budget is not delivering for Nigerians. Critical questions need to be asked that would ensure that Nigerians see themselves in that budget, and we have an equitable budget that would improve the standard of living for Nigerians. And I know that people may call this gender budgeting, because that is what it really is, about looking at who is covered in the budget and who is not benefiting in the budget. We need budgets that are implemented and shows us disaggregated data of beneficiaries. Our planning departments in Nigeria are not doing the work that they ought to do. These are the critical questions that National Assembly, because they will be instituted in May, they'll go on a bit of a break, they'll come back again, and by October, when they come back from their long break, they will start looking at the budget. That's why I'm mentioning this as a critical point that really needs attention by National Assembly. Aside from the law, they can take 2-3 years to get to the laws, but the budget is so critical. Nigerians need to start seeing themselves in that budget, especially women who bear a lot of the brunt and the burden of the inequalities in the country. So that's what I think National Assembly can do. The incoming president, when he was governor in Lagos State, a lot of women were given the position of vice chair for local government. It's not as though that position led to 100% positive outcomes, but it was something. And we know that Lagos State has modeled the way in terms of women's inclusion in position. And I do hope that he's able to do this, ensure that his cabinet has a representation of at least 50%. There are women that have been part of his campaign. He needs to show to us that those women that were part of his campaign, they matter. By putting in women, I'm not saying pull women from civil society organizations, but pull women from his party to be on his cabinet. Give women portfolios that are male dominated. Aviation, works and housing, or however they're going to reformulate.
You've had women in all these places now. Well, let me say two things, right? You've had women, Ken Machiko was an aviation minister before. Works and housing, I believe you had a northerner there. I need to check, but you've had a northerner there. Let me say two things, right? If you look at mid-independence, post-World War II to World War I, a big part of Nigeria's push for independence came by women. So the Abeokuta women's protests and the Aba women's riot, which, by the way, wasn't even the it's Aba women's riot. It's not, it wasn't all Igbo people. There were all kinds of people, women there, Ibibios, all kinds. So that push came by. And when you say these things about budget, even though some of the conversation about citizenship is tricky. I mean, we saw what's still going on in Lagos. We see in Lagos, we see other parts of the country. We don't even know what it is to be a Nigerian, if we're being honest. So where do we even start from there? But it's a good push that could be a push that actually redefines and restructures the country. I'm all for that as a whole. I'm not saying it has to be one way or another. I'm just saying that the current system is failing everybody, whether you're rich or you're poor. It's failing you. I've seen it fail me. I've seen a few people that were far richer than this thing. But my thing to somebody like you is like, okay, hey, which one do you want, man? Do you, if they say, we're not giving you 50%, yeah, right? We're giving you five great, no, we're not even giving you, we're giving you three great women. We're no, giving what, you your Konji Wallahs
of the world.
Why should
it be three great women? No, and then it, the other, the no, men my, are, my, are great.
I don't believe my in equality. Don't worry. Save yourself. Save yourself. But my own thing is this, right? Yeah. Would you prefer a competent person then than just numbers? Is it that you just want everybody to be able to steal money? Or you want competent people there?
I want, because there's competency in numbers. You know, it's a lie. When people say that, do you want competency or numbers? There is competency in numbers. The way that Nigeria, the positions that we have in Nigeria today, people critique it and say it's so tilted towards the north. Are we going to also put up the same argument and say that, is it about competency or numbers? There is competency in every area of Nigeria. Geographically, you will find women in every area of life. Is it women that are engineers? There are women that are engineers that are competent. So you see, we have come a long way in Nigeria in terms of even education. We've come a long way in terms of building our competency. I don't think that we can ever have a weak, incompetent. The structure might make somebody who is competent look incompetent though. That's one thing. Fashola came in, seemed like he was competent.
Very but now true.
We almost want to think he's not competent. It's the structure. So we need to be able, I think, at my own.
So the question then is, if the structure is this terrible, should we not work on the structure rather than on representational politics?
Both have to go
should
hand
we not
hand.
Invest okay both have to go hand
yeah
in hand. Okay,
because by
good.
The time you finish with the structure, yeah, it will be difficult to build on the representation if you've not started involving the representation at the time that you're building the structure. Part of building the structure, yes, is also representation. I think that it's so interwoven that we can't afford to split it up. Yeah.
Yes.
So Emeka, well, I want thank the you. Women in their numbers, and I want competent women because we can get there.
So then the thing should be that you should say, hey, there are people who are competent who meet the, you know, that should be more of the, and then people like us would be like, if you tell me you're giving me an Okonjo-Iweala as president, I'm like, where is my flight ticket? Can I register tomorrow? Let me go before this woman. Yeah. You know. But if you start telling me, well, you need 50%, I'm like, look, I have better things to do, man. Does this really matter? What does this matter? So for somebody like me,
it matters.
You know, that's me.
Numbers matter. Well, we're complaining now about how positions.
You know why it doesn't matter? You know why it doesn't matter? Yeah. You know why it doesn't matter? I know they say, like in the Quran, it says, if you train a woman, you train generations, which is true. Like, I see with my wife, the kids, she, no matter how big she, the education is a big part of it. But as a man, you're like a beast of burden. You're like a biblical beast of burden, an ox. You have so many things to take care of. I took care of my father for years in Nigeria, not just there, taking care of him. My sister was chilling in London. Nobody, till tomorrow, nobody bugs us. Nobody stopped that. I got all the insults. I'm a useless person. I'm just, you know, waiting for whatever. And after that, found my way and left. I don't control anything. My mother controls everything. If she wants, she tells me, right? So you have responsibilities as a man to take care of your families. Yeah.
Just like women also
depends on where you're from.
Yeah.
How much, if you are married, let more of your responsibility becomes your family. As a guy, most times for guys, nobody asked me till tomorrow. My sister has never squared that.
To you, Emeka, that people are different.
All right.
And families are different.
Okay, I agree.
And I think that it would then be erroneous to say that a married woman's responsibility is solely her primary family, because
no, I didn't say solely. It would be more that case. Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, it would be more that case. Well, yeah. But I get what you're saying. You don't agree.
Well,
Okay, now.
You know what?
Fine.
So, Emeka, this conversation has actually been such a fascinating discussion that, so I'm going to ask you, Wumi, at some point you're going to have to return.
I have to return.
So we're because the issues are, we could actually spend 5 hours and only feel like we've scratched, because you raised so many issues which I would want to follow up on. But you know, I'm sort of considerate because we had agreed on 1 hour, and I know that you have some engagement in about 20 minutes, and so that you have to run. But thank you very much for joining us on this great, great episode, and for kicking off our occasional series on civil liberties and human rights issues in our country, Nigeria. Thank you. So it's such a delight to have Wumi Ashubiaro Dada as our guest on this episode of the Offside Musings podcast. Thank you very much, Wumi, for joining
us. Thank you. It's been such an interesting conversation. And I think for next time, we can actually look at different themes. We can have a series of like three conversations where we look at different themes, so we can really go deep into the different themes.
That I think Emeka, we can actually schedule this thing quickly. You know, in a couple of weeks, we could have you come back, and then we agree on different areas and just spend an hour. You know, I know that you're traveling to around, and I'm actually going to Europe, and so maybe when we return, we can convene a series of these conversations, because I really, really have had a wonderful and enlightening experience.
Thank you.
We should definitely do it. Not to soften you up, but I spent a couple of months in Lasso back in the day. I actually went to Federal Government College Lagos. Yeah, I went to Ijaniki. Federal Government College Lagos. So
we went in that project. Do you know what told us when we asked her? We said, "Why are you not contesting for SUG president?" She said, "Hey." She said, "Do you know how they do their screening?" She said, "It's like when they are." What do you in cult, when cult want to blend you, they call it
something.
She said that's how they do this
initiation.
It's an initiation to do screening for SUG presidency. She said they will you get bitten, and you have to climb a fence and all the most work we did there was a female contested. I think she was maybe vice or maybe treasurer or something. Ijaniki.
That's in the College of Education, right? College of Education, Ijaniki.
Yeah.
Okay, I went to FGC Ijaniki, so I don't know anything about this.
Okay, for secondary school.
I don't know anything about. But it's a good story, though. I believe it, because I roamed around that place, Orin, Okokomaiko. Back in the day, it was fun.
And you see a reflection of how, because sometimes you see people that are in politics right now, in elected positions, they've come from that trajectory of being SUG president and all. You see how that is even a reflection of what has happened in the universities or post-secondary institutions. It's a tough game for women to play, even in the post-secondary institutions. And then it's then tougher when they come into what we call the real world and begin to play the same game of, is my thug better than your thug? You know, who can arm their thug the most? You know, and these are some of the things that affect some of the barriers that women actually face. A woman doesn't want to go into politics and have her children become marked for assassination because she's in politics. You know, I mean, let's not go into another rabbit hole.
Wow.
We will reconvene.
You've got me really excited about doing a series of conversations. So we'll take you up on that. So do let us know when you return from your travel, and then we'll schedule these conversations.
Okay. You've become our resident gender and feminist professional.
And you become her antagonist.
Come prepared next time, man.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Wumi, and thank you, Emeka. To all our listeners and followers out there, it's such a delight to have you on this episode. And please tune in for another episode shortly. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. All right. Yeah.